A paradigm productions and a fight in the fields. It's going to be a dub of Sound Roll 59. We're in Sacramento, and first interviewee is Chris Harkmeyer. And it's camera roll 124.
Let's try the green full face mask now.
Laurie, move your chair to the right.
What's our first guy's name?
Chris Harkmeyer. Even a little more. A little more, Laurie.
Okay, this is 12496 in Sacramento, and we're on the Sound Roll 59, and we're going to be interviewing Chris Harkmeyer. It's camera roll 124.
So we're jammed in.
Yeah.
Don't we get a tissue?
Oh.
Oh, what that's something.
No, just to melt down with Chris.
Oh, okay.
He wants to cover my nose, actually. I got a tissue. I got a hanky.
This is take. This is Chris Harkmeyer. Take one. Marker.
So, we've got a lot of ground to cover, but I want to sort of bounce around a little bit. Let's start in the early days of the strike. How important was what the churches did and the type of support you were able to mobilize in terms of supporting the early period of the strike?
Well, it turned out to be pretty important. At the beginning...
Hang on, cut for a second. My questions will never be on the thing. So when I ask you a question, how important was early church support, if you can try and incorporate my question into your answer, so you would say the church... I want your perspective on
why
how they came to be there, you know, how was it that they were online when none of the other groups were, you know?
You wanted to launch him, where he was coming from?
No, we'll get back to that.
Yeah, loop back.
Yes. We'll zig and zag. It's sort of...
Let's see.
This is take two. Marker.
So Caesar said that the church was crucial in the early days of the strike. How did it work?
Well, at the beginning, church support didn't seem that critical to us. I mean, we were there and quickly tried to get people to bring food to Delano for the strikers, and our staff was there with their cars, and that helped with the picket line. But the main thing was that we began immediately to involve church people from all over the state, eventually all over the country. And they would come to Delano, and they would see what they saw, and then they would talk to the media. Or if not, they would go back home and talk to their friends back home. And the growers were saying there was no strike. Growers were saying these were all outside agitators. The growers were saying, you know, Chavez is a communist. And yet we had bishops and church leaders and nuns and others saying, you know, well, we were out in the picket line today. We certainly saw a strike. We've talked to Caesar, we've talked to the strikers, you know, we don't see any sign that this is led by some outside force. Looks like a workers' strike to us. And so basically, without being too conscious of it at the beginning anyway, that the churches were totally undermining some of the growers' main propaganda themes.
Now, you obviously did a lot of traveling and talking to churches and trying to get them interested, but do you think bringing people to Delano was crucial to the process?
Yes, not just Delano. Bringing people to wherever the farmers were on strike or in a boycott was always crucial throughout the whole process. I mean, other things worked also, but nothing could substitute for having people there, seeing with their own eyes, listening to the strikers, learning, you know, with their own hearts what was happening and feeling it, and then going home with those feelings.
And then they become the people that spread the message rather than you, right?
Yeah, and that happened thousands and thousands of times in many, many different events over the years.
Now, when you came to the migrant ministry, you had decided on an activist vocation. Talk a little bit about your background and what led you to working with farmworkers and your vision of the church's role in society.
Well, I had been in seminary in New York City at Union Theological Seminary in the summer of 1959. I came to California to be a migrant ministry summer volunteer. I worked in Santa Clara County, and that was my first exposure to farm workers, period. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and where there were a lot of farm workers, but I was just, because I was a city boy, I was just not aware of it. So I learned about farm workers, I learned about the migrant ministry, I learned about the Bracero program, which was a hot issue at the time. And then I went back to seminary, and when I graduated, I went to work in East Harlem, in the what was called the East Harlem Protestant Parish. I worked with youth there. And in 1961, the director of the California Migrant Ministry left and went to Chicago. And he came to East, and with the help of the National Council of Churches, they just started putting pressure on me to come to California. I would never have come. I'd still be in East Harlem, except my wife was assaulted with her baby in her arms in an elevator in East Harlem, and she began to not feel at home. So slowly but surely, I realized that this was not going to work for us as a family. So that was happening at the same time Doug Still, who was my predecessor, was coming after me to come to California. So I went to California to be the director of the California Migrant Ministry in 1961. Mm-hmm. Very green, very young, and not really happy to go.
But did you have a vision of what as a priest, what the church could do to change people's lives or to support them or to uplift them?
Well, I was trained in a seminary and in a period in the church's history where we all, at least those of us who were together at Union Seminary, and we all believed that the church had a responsibility to be, you know, in the world, especially where people, you know, were in trouble, and not only to preach the gospel, but also to embrace other human needs and to respond to people where they were. So, I mean, it was the time of the civil rights movement. You know, I ended up being on a freedom ride in 1961. So, yes, I believed that the church had a responsibility to be involved in people's lives, in the issues of our society, and in change for justice. So that was my background when I went to California. And
but even so, California was a completely new world.
California, except for that summer experience, you know, California was completely new to me. And as I say, it wasn't really, I was kind of like a reluctant dragon going to California.
Now, part of that vision of the church helping the poor really came into conflict when you started working with the Union, because you ran into a church establishment in the Valley that had other values.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've been aware of that all along, but I mean, as a phenomenon, I hadn't experienced it the way, you know, we experienced
so
it in California.
What happened when you talked to the church people in Delano?
Well, I mean, you have to, the California Migrant Ministry, I mean, the Migrant Ministry goes back to 1920. I mean, this was like a, this was a much beloved, I always say much beloved and much ignored ministry of the church. I mean, we didn't have much money, we didn't have a lot of support, but people throughout the mainstream Protestant denominations believed that the migrant ministry was a good thing. And so we'd been around for a long time, we knew a lot of people. We were doing all these wonderful charitable service things and daily vacation Bible school and, you know, worship services for people and recreation for kids and nurses and labor camps and you name it, we tried it. Food baskets, Christmas toys.
And you try doing something else, and all of a sudden the response changes.
Yeah, well, after we were visible in Delano, everything changed. Most of our work had been with local church people, encouraging them to work with the farm workers in their communities, especially during the summer. So, but as soon as we were visible, it took a little while, maybe a few weeks, as soon as we were visible supporting the strikers in Delano, then we were like persona non grata in almost every church, everywhere. And I think in most valley churches, whatever valley, San Joaquin Valley, Coachella Valley, Imperial Valley, you name it, in all valley churches, we were seen as traitors, you know, as people who were supporting this communist, this radical, this agitator, this person who was trying to change a wonderful, you know, beautiful United Nations-like communities of, you know, of people getting along happily. And we were, you know, Caesar was trying to change it, the farm workers were trying to change it, and we, traitorous white church people, were siding with them. So the reaction, I mean, Caesar used to say, Chris, you know, when we would go to meetings together, he says, they're madder at you than they are at me. And the reason was we were seen as, like, turncoats.
What did that feel like when you told me about going to those meetings?
Going to meetings in the San Joaquin Valley in 1965 and 66 and 67, at first was like, you know, I didn't know what to expect. But, you know, if I had gone to a migrant ministry sponsored meeting in 1964, there would have been 20 people there. But in 1965 and 66, the church, you know, the churches were full and overfull. In some cases, people were on the lawn waiting to get in. And most of them were there to, you know, most of them were angry. Most of them wanted me to understand, you know, their point of view. Most of them were sure that we were ignorant and naive and didn't know what we were doing. And if we knew, we wouldn't be doing it. So the environment was extremely hostile. At first, I'm sure, I don't have any tapes, but I'm sure I tried to sort of like win my way. But very quickly, I realized that I was not going to change anybody's mind. And so I started just speaking to the very few people who were there supporting us so that they would be armed to deal with their neighbors and their friends and anybody else who was going to be arguing with them, because the rest could not change their minds. They were economically trapped in opposition to where we were.
And these were the same people who had, when you were doing the Bible study classes, thought you were the farm workers experts, right?
Exactly. They were not all the same people, but many. I must say there were people in every church, and there were even some ministers in the San Joaquin Valley who were supportive, some vocally, some quietly, but who believed that it was about time, and who believed us because they knew us well, and they knew we wouldn't be doing this, and we wouldn't be risking the finances of the migrant ministry over something that was just trivial and unimportant. So we had friends, but there weren't enough friends to open the door of any institution. We couldn't have meetings in churches.
We're going to stop and change the tape. Not the tape, the film. We have like 10 minutes, 11 minutes. You just consult the lawyer. Pat yourself on the forehead. I'll pat you on the back.
Next up is we're changing to camera roll 125, and it's Chris Hartmeyer, take 4.
Sitting back. You tend to do that.
I probably will move around. That's okay. The problem for you.
So, yeah, I do.
Rolling. Oops.
Am I going?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm rolling.
Okay, this is take 3. Archer?
Chris, let's talk a little bit more about how it was that the church was there.
Well, the church was there because the migrant ministry was there. So, I mean, in a way, you have to say all the church women, particularly church women who started the migrant ministry in New Jersey and then in California in the 20s and 30s. And so there was like always a migrant ministry from the 20s and 30s on. So that every summer at least, there were people working with farm workers all over the state of California. And most of that work coordinated by the group called the California Migrant Ministry in our state, the Arizona Migrant Ministry, the Indiana Migrant Ministry, et cetera. But in California, it was the California Migrant Ministry. So we were there. And every summer we were there. And in California, we were there not only summers, but year round. And what happened was a lot of really good-hearted church people who didn't much understand the dynamics of it, the political or economic dynamics of it, fell in love with farm workers and their kids. And then every year they saw, year after year after year, that nothing ever changed. No matter how much they tried, no matter what they did, nothing ever changed. It was like the same thing. The same families, the same children, the same dirt floors in the shacks, the same kids playing, you know, in ditches and in anyway, and you know, the same poverty, the same hunger, the same health problems, always the same, nothing ever different. And so most migrant ministry people, no matter what their political affiliation, somewhere in their heart yearned that this would change. And they didn't know how to change it. We didn't know how to change it. So then, in the midst of this reality, CSER and the National Farm Workers Association comes along to organize farm workers so that they can change the situation themselves. And most of us were just ready. In fact, our summer volunteers used to push us at the end of every summer, you know, like, why aren't you organizing something? Why is this changing? They were all feeling guilty going back to college, right? So they want us to change it so next summer it'll be better. But we didn't try, because we would have mucked it up real bad. But CSER came, and there he was, and they were organizing, and it was just like the most natural thing in the world for us to support what farm workers were trying to do to change their own conditions so that they could buy toys for their own kids, so they could negotiate a decent wage, so they could take care of the problems that they encountered with labor contractors and with no toilets and with no clean drinking water and God knows what else, right? So it was natural for us. Fortunately, we had no idea how difficult it was going to be. But so the migrant ministry was there, CSER came along, it was just natural. And he made sure we knew what he was doing. Prior to the strike in 65, CSER used to come to our staff retreats. I would stop in Delano on my trips to the valley. He always made sure that we knew what was going on and why. And he let us help him in little ways. Not with money or anything like that, but in little ways he let us help us. And so he established that connection and made sure that it got stronger and stronger. So that at 65, when the strike happened, he wasn't expecting it then. He said, can you help? And I probably was the only one who knew that this was going to be somewhat difficult, right? But I had no idea how difficult it was going to be. But even if I had said, no, CSER, this is too complicated, this is too political, my denominations that support the migrant ministry will not support this, I'm just so sorry. I mean, even if I had taken that position, our staff would have gone to Delano anyway. I mean, by that time, they were so committed to change. But we said, yeah, we'll help in these little ways. And then it got
bigger and bigger, though. I mean, I'm thinking...
It got bigger and bigger.
Early in the strike, in like October of 65, when a bunch of priests organized a demonstration that led to people being arrested. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Actually, when you think about it, it was pretty amazing. And we were sort of like available with our hearts open, and CSER was thinking about it all the time, how to make use of this resource, right? So couldn't have been a week after the strike started that we had people from religious leaders from the National Council of Churches, from the State Council of Churches, from denominational groups in Delano to observe. That was when Bishop Sumner Walters from Stockton got dusted by a crop duster. And anyway, they were the first high-level group, but that happened like a week after the strike started. And they made a public statement, and then they made a study report that other churches could use. And then, I mean, like a week or two after that, was when the Kern County Sheriff said, strikers can't cry Welga. And so CSER thought that was a little, carrying things a little far, right, constitutionally speaking. So we gathered a whole bunch of church people and Helen and some strikers, and we all went out to the picket line and started shouting Welga. And of course, they arrested everybody. And then those folks went home. They got out of jail. They went home, and they started telling everybody in their churches and whatever. And it just, you know, the needs of the strikers were so obvious. First, their courage, their sacrifice was so obvious to people who came to see, and their needs were so obvious and so clear that people were touched in their hearts, and then they would go home and do, you know, whatever it took. These people need our help. And you got to remember, it was like the civil rights time, right? So people from the cities were not surprised when people from the valley said, you know, these are communists, these are outside agitators. I mean, it was just like a replay of the South. So there was a lot of understanding, you know, that maybe the local people who say they know more than we do don't really know more than we do. They know something, but they don't know the whole situation. So that was also, the background of that was a big help to us.
Tell me something in terms of personally what it felt like to have this connection and this caring and to finally be in a situation where you felt it was working and you were going in the right direction. What did it feel like?
There was some worry, right? Like our support from the rural areas was drying up. So there was some like administrative worry. And then I was the one who had to report to the committees. You know, there was a Northern California Migrant Commission and a Southern California Migrant Commission, and together they made and then we reported to the Council of Churches, and the Council of Churches was made up of the denominations. So like the more controversial the migrant ministry became, the more work there was with these constituencies to make sure that they were on board, that they knew exactly what happened and why. And so there was that kind of like administrative work, which sometimes was tense and sometimes frustrating and sometimes balanced, a burden.
But it was balanced by something personal.
But it was like a minor thing because we were so busy actually, you know, doing the work of organizing the support, being in Delano, organizing the support, getting church people there, seeing them, you know, turn on and get excited and go home and do their stuff, so that like it was, you know, we were, it's hard to say we were enjoying it, but we were certainly getting a lot of spiritual human satisfaction out of this struggle, and never felt like we were doing enough. It always seemed like the farm workers were doing that much more, so whatever we did, we never really felt like we were doing enough. And the administrative stuff was just like a detail that I had to handle. The rest of our staff didn't really have to worry about it that much. And pretty soon, the financial support from the urban areas was more than taking the place of the financial support we were losing in the rural areas. All of a sudden, the migrant ministry, in many people's minds, was something worth supporting, because we weren't just doing Christmas toys and Thanksgiving turkeys and, you know, we were involved in changing the situation.
Now, as the strike continued, you know, the next phase really evolved in the next few years. That at a certain point, the boycott, instead of being a brand boycott, was a national boycott, and the church played a crucial role in the Great Boycott, didn't it?
Yes. I think looking back, the church's involvement was crucial, especially in the earliest days, because the grower's strategy obviously is isolate these strikers in this local setting and then bring all of our resources to bear and crush them, right? And of course, Caesar's strategy was to make this event visible way beyond Delano, and the church became a major, major part of telling this story all over the place. So that the growers were just like constantly frustrated. First of all, their propaganda was being countered by these, you know, believable church people. I mean, why would somebody come from San Francisco to see a picket line and lie about it? I mean, everyone knew why the growers would lie about it, right? But certainly this bishop from Stockton wouldn't lie about it. And plus we were making it more and more visible. So it was like the church confused the growers. I think they just didn't know how to deal with it. And it also affected them psychologically or emotionally, because it was like their church. I mean, this is like my local Methodist church was, in fact, connected to the Council of Churches, which was, in fact, supporting this migrant ministry. So, I mean, like, anyway.
They must have felt betrayed, right? They thought they had
Yeah, it's kind of funny. See, I've never researched this, but I believe every local church in every valley of California that was connected to a mainstream denomination took a position, voted on a position to cut off support for the Council of Churches or the Migrant Ministry or the denomination's support for the Migrant Ministry.
We've got to stop for a second. Change. We've got to change tape. This is going well.
End of the sound roll.